Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning to you. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for tuning in and spending some time with us this morning, this wonderful Saturday, September morning, where I don't know where you're at, but around here it's cool and brisk, and I am in my glory. That's about it. That's all I got.
I'm not enjoying it quite as much as he is, but it's nice to have a break from the heat. But unfortunately, that also means that the Michigan winter is around the corner, and that I'm not looking forward to.
It's all right. I'm fine with it. Just have to layer up. It'll be okay.
I'll remember that when you come home from work complaining.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. I'm all right. I can handle it. I'm tough. I'm from Detroit. So anyway, today on Voices for Change 2.0, we're talking with an advocate and coach who works in both mental health and addiction recovery. He's an extraordinary guy who suffered with anxiety, depression, and addiction, and he brings his experience to the good work that he does. Please welcome the rewired soul, Chris Boutte.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. It's awesome to have you with us, calling in all the way from beautiful, lovely Las Vegas.
Yes. Yeah. We plan to retire to.
Yep. Where we plan to someday be old.
Yeah. If you're trying to get away from the heat, this is a bad place to do that.
Yeah. I know.
So before we proceed, I just want to do a little housekeeping here. Don't forget that you can call in and ask us or Chris questions. And the number to call is 347-989-0126. If you're on the Blog Talk page listening to the show on your computer, you'll see a box of scrolling photos. And under that, there is a chat room that our lovely producer Scott monitors for us and lets us know if anybody's in there and has any questions. And you can also tag us with hashtag VFChange on Twitter. And I have Twitter up on my screen as we speak. So if you have any questions, just send them out to that hashtag. And that would be about it.
I think that covered all the bases.
Yeah, I think so.
Good job, babe. Good job.
So thanks again for joining us, Chris. And so if you're ready and you don't have any questions for us, we're going to jump right in.
No, let's do this. I'm excited.
Sweet. All right. So let's talk about you a little bit first. When were you first diagnosed with anxiety and depression?
That's one of the reasons I do what I do, because I wasn't diagnosed until after I got sober. So I was about 27 years old when I got sober, and that's when it happened. Cause I noticed, all these symptoms developed when I was a teenager, like when I was, just starting out in high school or maybe even middle school. And that's why I turned to drugs and alcohol. I was self-medicating myself. I was looking around at the world and wondering why everybody was able to, deal with the world so much better than I was. And then I found drugs and alcohol. They calmed my brain down. I was like, okay, cool. After I got sober, all of that anxiety started coming back. And depression's very common, and so is anxiety when you get sober. But mine was staying around, and I was freaking out. And my mom is not only in recovery, but she's also a psychologist who works at a treatment center. And I told her, and she's like, you need to go see a doctor. So I was like, okay. So I went to a doctor, started explaining all my symptoms and stuff, and she's like, you're having panic attacks, and like, you have like a lot of anxiety, and da 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 da. So I was like, really? Like, these are things that never even crossed my mind. It was like, it was almost like a relief, you know what I mean? Like, when you get a diagnosis, like, and you start following up and then they actually give you something to help you out with it, you're like, oh, wow, so I'm not insane. I just have anxiety. Well, it's kind of insane. You know, it makes you feel insane. But,
right,
but it was
right.
just like, I was like, wow, there's actually something going on, you know?
That's, well, I mean, that's cool. You know, it's cool that your mom helped recognize that, and even better that, you know, you sought out help and you got it and you're able to see it in yourself now. And, you know, that's great, you know, cause a lot of people, they, you know, they're almost afraid to take that step, you know, and they don't know what's going on. And, you know, they're like, well, my God, what if I'm crazy? What if I'm this? What if I'm that? It's like, well, okay, what if you are, you know, well,
right.
There are things you can do about that, you know, and, you know, don't be afraid of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, for me, and that's why I try to, you know, I work at a treatment center now, like aside from all the other advocacy stuff I'm doing, but I try to tell people, like, there's nothing wrong with this. And, you know, that's why, you know, and I love the name of your guys' podcast and stuff. Like, we need to change. We need to start talking about this stuff. Like, it's normal. It happens. And we're in a generation where more people are struggling with mental illness than ever before. Like, why aren't we talking mm-hmm. about it more so people go and seek the help they need? Like, that's what I talk about. Like, if you broke your arm, like, you wouldn't just say, oh, well, I guess I just got to live with this. You know, like, you'd go get help.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and I actually have a theory about that because you know we've been talking about this for a year, quite honestly, with as long as the podcast has been going on, that you know it seems like it's more prevalent now than it ever has been. And I really wonder if it isn't more that it's always been there, but people have, you know, because of stigma, they've been afraid to talk about it, they've been afraid to seek out treatment, and now it's more. It is more standardized than it was, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50 years ago.
Yeah, I've written about this before. Is it, mm-hmm. is there actually more of it, or is it just that we're more aware of it?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I think.
I think it's a combination of two things. One of them is that, you know, the stigma and people not coming out and talking about it. Like, I'm reading a book right now that was written like back in the 30s or 40s, and like mm-hmm. the terms they use, like, you were just crazy, like, that's all they said, like, that was your diagnosis, was just crazy, like, back then.
Right.
But also, there's some studies out there, and I can't remember where I read this, but there's some studies out there, and one of the reasons, like, anxiety is a huge one, and one of them is because we're so connected right now. Like, for example, I have two cell phones. One for me and then one for my work, right? Like,
right.
I'm constantly being inundated with information. And think about it, like, you know, I'm 32, so growing up in the 90s and stuff, like, unless I sat down and watched the news, I didn't know about tragedy happening all over the world. You know what I mean? Now,
right.
we get flooded with that information constantly. We can see stuff happening in Africa, in Europe, in India, you know, all over the place. So
in real time.
Exactly, and those are things that are going to fuel that fight, flight, or freeze mechanism in our brain, the amygdala, so we're getting this information constantly, you know? So that, and then just, we're more connected than we used to be. Like, imagine growing up in the 40s or 50s, like, you knew the people in your neighborhood, you know what I mean? And now, we're, like, you're talking to me from across the country, you see what I'm saying? So we're more connected with the world. There's a lot of things that can induce anxiety, too.
Right.
There was also another study about depression, too, about just social media and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like,
you know, and,
mm-hmm.
Sorry, I was going to say,
no,
you know, Beck and I were actually kind of talking about this yesterday. You know, she's, you know, in the effort to put out transparency as far as she and I are concerned. You know, she's been struggling a little bit more lately, and she made an observation about herself yesterday because she's been mainly watching a lot of movies and a lot of television shows and just avoiding, you know.
No, I haven't been watching any television.
Well, not I mean, when I say television shows, I mean, like, you know, Little Women or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, we had, at one point, our DVR had like 138 shows on it that were recorded that were waiting for me to watch. And I just have not been able to watch them. All day long, all I've been doing is staying off regular TV and just watching movies. And it could be the same movies that I watched the day before over and over and over again. And it occurred to me, and I had to call Joe and tell him about this, that I feel like I might be sort of safeguarding myself from reality and everything that's going on out there right now. Because, you know, I just lost my dad in May.
We've had a lot of,
you know, struggles within the family due to that and everything. And, you know, I think that maybe I'm purposely avoiding the public and, you know, what's out there, everything that's happening with all these, you know, storms and race wars and just, you know, just blinding myself to it that I don't have to
in a form of self-preservation, you know. And it's funny when she mentioned that, because, you know, it got me thinking, and, you know, my anxiety the last couple of months especially has been up. And I'm, you know, when we're not talking mental health, you know, one of my focuses is, you know, political stuff. And, you know, seeing everything that's been going on, you know, in Washington and with our fearless leader, and, you know, just, you know, it gets hard to take, and it gets very frustrating and very, you know, I've been very angry and very stressed out over a lot of stuff. And, you know, to the point where now I'm almost forcing myself to take a little bit of a step back just for my own self-preservation on this, you know. And it's almost an inundation. And, you know, you have to kind of protect yourself.
Yeah.
You know, or you get overwhelmed, you know.
Yeah.
And like when you've got two phones and you're getting information on a 24/7 basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so glad you two are talking about that. Like, That is so important for any of us who struggle with mental illness, is having that self-awareness and knowing that I cannot, or I might not be able to handle this right now, you know, because a lot of people don't do that. And then what they end up doing is just adding more fuel to that fire, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And sometimes you just got to take a step back. It's crazy too, because one of the biggest things, like, just for mental health, is having support. And while you two were talking, like, it just reminded me, I'm in a YouTube creator, like, Facebook group, and we were just chatting it up, and the topic of depression came up. And, like, sometimes you get support in the weirdest places too, you know. And we were talking about this exact same topic of, you know, like, when you're in this funk, sometimes you just got to stop watching the news for a while, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like, you know, And when I talk about mental health too, I think, you know, more people just need to look at it almost like physical health. Like, it's something you should maintain every day. So, for example, like, if you're single and you're lonely and you're depressed, don't go watch a bunch of romance movies. Like, it's just going to fuel that depression. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I just got to know that this is a bad idea right now. So, yeah, absolutely. I can totally relate with what you two are talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, you're just, you know, throwing more fuel on the fire. You mentioned that, you know, when we asked about your anxiety and depression diagnosis, that you actually were diagnosed after you became sober. Do you want to maybe talk a little bit about, you know, your addiction and what you were addicted to and how you finally overcame it?
Yeah. I grew up with an alcoholic mom. She's celebrating 12 years sober in November. October. That's what it is. So she's going to be 12 years sober. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. That's something I try to talk about too. Like, it's not only did she get sober, but because she got sober, she saved my life. But yeah, I was one of those kids growing, and a lot of kids of alcoholics and addicts, we swear that we're never going to end up like them. And I was actually a late bloomer. I didn't start drinking until I was 18. It was like end of my senior year, and it was after one of those devastating high school breakups. I was in love, and we were going to get married and all that stuff. And not only was I feeling depressed and the anxiety was killing me, I had a lot of anger issues. Like, even before my addiction, I had a lot of anger towards the world just of the way, because of the way I grew up. And I got to the point where I just didn't want to feel anything. And I was like, well, I heard alcohol helps you not feel anything. And the second I, like, I was a triathlete. I did football, wrestling, track. Always avoided, I was, like, avoiding parties my whole high school career. Like, I was a big video game nerd. So when people were partying, I was playing video games. But finally, after that breakup, and I just didn't want to feel anything, I was like, you know what, forget it. I'm going to go to this party. And I went, and as soon as, like, that kind of buzz turned into a drunk feeling, I just something, this light bulb went off in my head, and I was like, this is what I've been looking for my entire life, you know? And that's extremely scary, and that's what a lot of addicts first experience with drugs and alcohol is. Because they, you know, that's how we get hooked. And that's something that I talk about. Like, one of the reasons I kind of, like, started gaining, you know, a name for myself was I made this video that went viral where this guy was saying addiction isn't a disease. And I am a prime example of somebody who was affected by the genetic component of addiction. So just to lay it out for you, my mom is an addict in recovery. Her identical twin sister is an addict in recovery. My uncle is an addict in recovery. And my sister is a recovering gambling addict. Like, we have the addiction gene. So I was screwed from the beginning. it was alcohol for a very long time. It started progressing. It got worse and worse and worse. But then I found prescription pain pills. And when I found those, I was like, another light bulb went off. I'm like, oh, wow, because my life was a mess. And I was like, wait a second, with pills, I don't smell like alcohol. I don't get hungover, you know. I can do it a lot more discreetly, all these things. So that ended up becoming my primary substance of choice. But then I started mixing alcohol in the mix as well. And not only was it just dangerous, but I just spiraled really downhill. And back in 2012, the last 4 months before I got sober, like, it was a mess. Like, I quote unquote tried to get clean before, but I, like, when I say quotes, I never really tried, you know?
Right.
And, like, that's the thing, like we were just talking about, it takes work, it takes effort, it takes, you know, we have to do something different. And those last 4 months before I got clean, I wasn't even allowed to see my son. I was so bad that my mom ended up calling my son's mom and saying, like, you can't let Dylan around Chris anymore because he's always messed up. And it was true. And I got angry and I got resentful. But what ultimately led to me getting sober is I was having a lot of health issues. And addiction kind of, like, it makes you completely insane. Like, insane. I was having all sorts of health issues. I was going to the emergency room every other week. And finally they admitted me, and my mom was my emergency contact, and they called her, and they said, you need to come down to Las Vegas because we don't think your son is going to live through the night. I had a 10% chance of living. I had congestive heart failure at 26 years old. My heart was about the size of my lung. But the crazy part of addiction is, and you know, because addiction, it fuels depression. And so I talk about this in the first book I wrote, Hope. Like, I had my family sitting in there, like my mom, my aunt, my best friend, my kid's mom, and they're begging me to stop. And I'm just like, just let me go. Like, I'm going to die this way. There's no, like, don't even worry about me. Like, that's where depression brings us. That's where addiction brings us. And just, you know, thank God they didn't give up on me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they ended up kicking me out of the hospital after about a week because I didn't have insurance. And my mom helped me get sober. Like, it wasn't by choice. Like, I was just ready to die. But you know, luckily I found this solution. And that's why I do what I do. Like, I want to show people out there that, you know, it is possible to overcome not just addiction, but just mental illness and live a really awesome life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, Chris, we're going to stop you there because we want to pursue that line of questioning. God, I sound like a detective now. we want to talk about that, but we're going to take a break, and we're going to play No One Is Alone by Alexander Rodriguez. And hang on to the thought you were making, because we're going to pursue that more on the other side of this.
Cool.
No one here to guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still you're not alone. No one is alone. Truly, no one is alone. Sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone. People make mistakes. Fathers, mothers, people make mistakes. Holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right, and giants can be good. You decide what's right, you decide what's good. Just remember, someone is on your side, someone else is not. While you're seeing your side, maybe you forgot that they are not alone.
Hey, welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe, and this is Rebecca next to me. Sorry, might have caught us off guard a little bit there. We are here with Mr. Chris Boutte. How you doing, sir?
I am still amazing.
That's great. So, yeah, and we're talking about a bunch of different stuff. And, Becca, darling?
Yeah. So I have a question for you, Chris. How did you decide that you wanted to become an advocate and help others?
Oh, that's a great question.
Well, we asked the hard-hitting stuff.
Like, I always say it like this. For my first 2 years sober, I was a closet recovering addict. Even though I got sober, I was in the dark about it. I didn't tell people. I didn't want people to look at me differently. You guys probably know what I'm talking about. Like, once people, they're like, oh, and I didn't want pity. I didn't want people, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But on my 2 year, when I got my 2 year sobriety coin, there's a lot of moments in my life now that I'm talking about this stuff where like light bulbs went off. I got my 2 year coin from a meeting, and I was looking down at it because I was walking. I didn't have a car back then. And I was looking at it, and I'm like, man, I never thought in a million years I could stay clean for 2 years. And then I started thinking, I'm like, I bet there's a lot of other people out there who never thought, you know what I mean? Like, they never think that they can do this. And I was like, right. Well, how am I supposed to let people know that this is possible if I'm not sharing my own story? So I went home, and I took a picture of that two-year coin, and I posted it on Facebook, and I was just, all I said was, like, 2 years sober. And I started having people message me that I hadn't talked to in years, just people saying, like, hey, I think I have a problem drinking. What should I do? People saying, hey, my brother, my sister, my dad, my uncle. You know, just I started getting all these messages. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I started realizing, like, this is affecting a lot of people. And so I started a website around that time where, because I'm a writer by trade, and I started doing that. But, you know, through a series of events at the old company I was working with, I started managing a project for my work won't care if I say their name, American Addiction Centers. I started managing a project for American Addiction Centers, and the person I was working with, like, their corporate office is in Nashville. She said she was coming to Las Vegas, and then, like, I was like, when she got back, I was like, what were you doing in Las Vegas? They're like, oh, we have a treatment center out there. And I'm like, really? And I told her, because I never told her before, that I was actually in recovery, and she loved the work that I was doing for them and stuff. And she's, you know, the second that a position opened up here in Vegas, she let me know, and she helped me get that job. So I've been with American Addiction Centers for, it's just been 2 years now. On August 31st was when I started 2 years ago. But anyways, like, I was in the treatment center and just helping people out just all day long, helping people with their, you know, with their recovery, with their mental health issues and stuff. And, not to toot my own horn or anything, but I saw that I was really getting through to people, you know, and a lot of people stay in touch with me and stuff like that. And my mom's been a huge supporter too. Like, mom, like, and you know how, like, depression gets and stuff like that. And I have to battle that voice in my head that tells me, oh, Chris, you're not that great. You're not that good. And my mom has been just my biggest fan. Like, my mom is this little Sicilian lady, and she will tell you how it is. So when my mom tells me, like, Chris, you are better than some of the people I know who have 4-year degrees or 7-year degrees and stuff like that, like, I was like, she's being honest, you know? So,
wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, yeah, man. Like, and it's huge too, because I felt like I let her down for so long, and now that she can actually be proud of me, like, that's huge. And I basically, you know, I saw what I was doing in the treatment center. I think about how many people don't have insurance, don't have access to the stuff that I'm doing. I'm like, well, why don't I just do this on a larger scale online? But that's one of the reasons I do it, because just a lot of people don't have access to this type of stuff. But also, just as far as the advocacy stuff goes through, like, you know, like I was saying, I was a closet recovering addict. Like, I felt in the dark, I felt ashamed. So I'm hoping just by going out there, putting my big bearded face on YouTube videos and hopping around, people are going to be like, oh, I felt like that too. Maybe I can do that. You know what I mean? And so I just want to get the word out there. But there's so much, especially when it comes to addiction, there's just, like, when I went viral with that video a couple months ago, like, just reading the comments just broke my heart. Like, just so many people just, like, addicts are making terrible choices. Like, there were people out there legitimately saying that addicts deserve to die. And I'm like, you know, like, at that point, we're not even looking at them as human beings. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, these are people. These are people who have mothers and fathers. A lot of these people have children. A lot of these people have friends. You know, like, I was that person. Like, these people can get better. Like, let's quit shaming them, and let's try to find them some help, you know? So that's kind of just my motivation to just keep doing what I'm doing.
It's a very selfless motivation, man. It's awesome. You know, good on you.
Yeah. No, I'm trying. I love it. And that's the thing. I love what you two are doing. I love it. I love it so much. Like, and we all just, and And that's why I always use the hashtag. If y'all are listening and you're not using it, keep talking MH, because that's what we need to do. Like, when it becomes a normal conversation, the same as, like, the football game on Sundays or, you know, like, what's going on in the world, like, we need to just keep talking about this stuff.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's why I came up with it.
Exactly.
Know, just because I wanted something that would be broad enough to, you know, take on the entire spectrum of mental health and including addiction. And, you know, I didn't want to narrow it down too much to just one thing. I wanted everybody to be able to use
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing with it, is it's such a, it is a very broad spectrum. You know, you've got, you know, you've got addiction, you've got bipolar disorder, and, you know, DID and OCD. I mean, just there's so many different types of mental illness out there, and we need to talk about it and make it as common of a conversation as breaking your leg or getting, mm-hmm. you know, getting diabetes or, you know, different things like that. I mean, it just we need to break the stigma is what it is.
Yeah, and a lot of it, like, that's a lot of the reason why I talk to my son about mental health. He's only 8 years old, you know what I mean? And he's probably more educated on mental health than, unfortunately, than some adults, because I talk to him about it, because I look back at my teen years when I was going crazy, when I felt like I was going crazy, and I couldn't talk to anybody about it. So I really believe that it's going to start out by us talking to kids, you know, and stuff. You know, I don't like tell my son all the darkness, you know, and stuff, but I just let him know. And we practice mindfulness together, like meditation and stuff, and just let him know, like, you need to take care of your brain as much as you do your body. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny that you bring up your son and talking with him. You know, you have a new article on the Mighty site called Teaching Kids About Mental Health. You know, this is such an important thing, in a big way, that we're going to break mental health stigma for the future. And when we talked the other day, you mentioned how open you are with your son about your struggles. What approach should someone take to be open and honest with their children about their struggles?
Yeah, you know, a while back, earlier this year, I did a video about how we need to be honest with our kids about emotions. I follow this, there's this one neuroscientist named Dr. Dan Siegel. He has a lot of awesome YouTube videos and books, and I've read a bunch of his books too. And it's about the brain development of kids. And so one of the things was, me growing up with an alcoholic mom, as a child, you're just really confused. You don't understand these mood swings. You don't understand why they can't give up drinking for you. You don't understand why they're angry even though you didn't do anything wrong. Like, this is a key part of a child's developmental stage. You know what I mean? So even though, like, I'm very, very, very fortunate that my son does not remember any of my addiction days. He was 3 when I got sober. But I still struggle with mental illness. And part of this conversation that I have with him, like, for example, on Sunday, on Sunday I got 2 flat tires, not 1, but 2. And I was with my son, so the anxiety's coming, all this stuff. And I had to let my son know. I said, Dylan, listen, I'm going through a lot of stuff right now in my brain, so, like, if you could do me a favor and just kind of be quiet while I try to focus, make sure we get home alive. And I apologize to him in advance to let him know, like, I don't mean to snap at you. If I do, it's just there's a lot going on in my head right now. You know what I mean? And that a conversation that simple helps my son realize, okay, there's something going on with daddy right now. There's nothing that I'm doing wrong. You see what I'm saying? So I think that's the first step in having that conversation, because, you know, even though I'm sober now and I'm managing my anxiety and depression and stuff like that, like, a lot of parents, even myself, I can have a rough day at work, and it's not fair to my child to bring that home with me. So on those days that are really bad, I have to let him know what's going on with me mentally, so he knows that he's not at fault. You know what I mean?
Right.
just the other day, I was in the grocery store, and there was a mother there with her two kids, and she was just going off on them, and they seem pretty well behaved, if you ask me, like, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
But as she was, you know, going off on them, she was talking about how she had worked 12-hour days and stuff like that, and like all I could do was empathize with the kids. Like, I get it, us like parents, we deal with a lot of stress and stuff like that, but we need to manage our mental health so our kids don't get the brunt of that. You know what I mean? And when we're talking to our kids about mental health and what's going on in our mind, they can just start to understand and maybe even empathize with us. You see what I'm saying? So they're like, so they can, you know, take care of us and be kind and gentle with us, you know? But yeah, I don't think enough people do that.
No, they don't. They don't.
It's
also
the same way with a spouse.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly
That's
exactly the way that I handle it with Joe. When I'm struggling, that's the first thing I do is immediately tell him, hey, look, it's, you know, I'm having a bad day. It's not you. You know, it's just, you know, me going through some tough times.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's important to do that with any relationship, just to make sure that the person knows that they can, you know, what they can say and what they can't say, and
yeah, I mean it's really appreciated too on my part, because you know early on in our marriage and our relationship, you know, she'd get, you know, really angry, for example, and I thought, well, what did I do, you know, and I couldn't make sense of it, and I was confused, and we started communicating better, and it helped me understand. Well, no, this is just part of what she deals with on a day-to-day basis. It's not anything that I'm doing. It's just her reaction to outside stimuli. And, you know, at this point, I changed my outlook to, like, look at what she was going through and saying, okay, well, what can I do to make this better or easier for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once I started approaching it like that, it was it changed, you know, everything changed, and, you know, we got even closer, and, you know, we were just, the communication was just so much better, and now I can gauge it, and I can see it. Sometimes I think I pick up on it before she does, where, you know, I can see where she's, you know, starting to you know, head on a, you know, maybe a downward slope a little bit, and I'll be like, okay, I need to, you know, be a, you know, get out the kid gloves and you know, try and be a little extra sensitive, you know?
I just wanted to pause in there. Like, everything you two are saying, I just got the biggest smile. Like, that is amazing. That is so amazing. I love that. Like, and I'm so glad that you two are doing this show and, like, everything that you two are doing, because, like that's for real. Like, because, like, as you two are talking, I'm imagining, like, let's say Beck got the flu, you know, like, let's say she had the flu. What would you do? You would tell her to, you know, lay in bed, you bring her some soup, and you would do all these things, right? But it's the same thing with mental illness. You see that something's happening, and you do what a loving partner is going to do in that situation. But, and I think you made a great point too, like, a lot of us think it's us, and, you know, I do a lot of research on, like, neuroscience. I'm a big neuroscience nerd, and just as human beings, we're very selfish. Like, when things happen, like, have you ever been driving and you hear somebody honk their horn and you immediately think it's about you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's our instant reaction. So when we start talking to each other about this stuff, we realize, oh, it isn't me, you know? That's so awesome. I love you, too. I love you guys. That's
Thanks,
awesome.
Chris. We love you, too.
We think you're a pretty awesome dude, too. So
tell us about the rewired soul. What exactly is that?
So it originally started. So, like I said, I'm a big neuroscience nerd, and I'm very scientific about stuff. And when I started doing more and more research about anxiety and depression, the two primary mental illnesses I start with, I started learning about all these different ways that we can actually rewire our brain. Like, I have a whole series on my YouTube channel called Depression Hacks These are all tips that help stimulate different neurotransmitters like dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, endorphins, all these things. And we can start rewiring these neural pathways. So that's kind of where I came up with the name for it. And that's one of the reasons why I'm such a big advocate for mindfulness practices too, because there is so much, now that it's 2017, there is so much research out there that shows that as little as 10 minutes a day of meditation can start to rewire your brain. And I really want to get that information out there, like, especially for people who don't like taking medications. Like, I get that. I am that person. I've been on Lexapro, which is part anti-anxiety, part antidepressant. And there's sometimes I get off of it and sometimes I have to go back on it. But for those people who don't want to take medications, I want to let them know there's another solution. But anyways, I started out as the Rewire. My mom has her own practice in Fresno, California. So she works at an outpatient treatment center, but she also does one-on-one sessions, couples therapy, and all that stuff. And she called it Soul Solutions. And my mom and I have always been trying to figure out a way to work together, but we're both kind of stuck where we're at. Like, she's not moving to Las Vegas. I'm sure as heck not moving to Fresno, California. If anybody from Fresno's listening to this, I love you. I just never want to live there again. So check this out. I'm gonna let you know my big idea. After working in a treatment center for this long, I've always thought like, a lot of this stuff can be done online, you know? So my treatment center, American Addiction Centers, we have treatment centers all over the country. So here in Las Vegas, I would say a good 95% of my clients do not live in Las Vegas. And a lot of them come from very, very small towns. Like, we're talking about the type of towns where you got to drive 2 hours to get to the closest, like, hospital or therapist. So my mom and I were talking, and I'm like, why don't we start providing this stuff online? Like, kind of like you and I are talking right now on Skype. Like, you could do Skype sessions. There's a bunch of different programs out there to do group therapy sessions, like Zoom or GoToMeeting or whatever it is. So we combined it, you know, the Rewire with Soul Solutions. My girlfriend actually came up with the name The Rewired Soul. I was, like, racking my head. I'm like, what name can I have? And then she said that. I'm like, yes. So I made the website, therewiredsoul.com. I put up a couple courses on there, and I kind of did it backwards because I put that up before, like, building my online presence so people know who the heck I am. I put that up there, but then I had that Facebook video go viral. I got a huge following, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just keep doing as much stuff as I can to just get information out there and grow my name and stuff. So I do a ton of this stuff, and like, so the Rewired Soul, hopefully that gets off the ground and I can eventually someday just start helping a lot of people through that and make a living for myself doing that. But one of the things too is on my website, therewiredsoul.com, like, I'm trying to do things as cheap as possible. Because a lot of people, like I said, a lot of people don't have healthcare that will give them access to stuff. So, like, for example, my mom has a PhD in psychology, and she's been doing this for 15 years. And most psychologists, even with insurance, you're going to be paying, I don't know, 60, 80 bucks, some of them 140. You know, like, it's crazy, wow. Right? And my mom does sessions for $40, you know? Like, oh, hold on, maybe 60. I don't remember. Like, I don't want somebody, like, people running by and her losing money. But anyways, like, so like, it's weird, too, because there's so many things, and that's why I do so much content on my YouTube channel. There's so many just things that you can do for free for yourself. But at the end of the day, too, unfortunately, we live in a society where I have bills and stuff like that. So I'm trying to get some things that I can, you know, make a little bit off of. But for the most part, I just want to help as many people as possible. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. And that's awesome that you know, cognizant of, you know, people are financially strapped right now. You know, and that's the other part, too, with all this is – you know, people want to get help, and part of the reason they might not is because they're afraid that they can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was an issue for us early on in our marriage. When we first got together, Beck's whole treatment was through a program with the county. You know, she didn't have insurance, certainly not mental health insurance, and
mm-hmm.
my health insurance when we got married didn't really have much of a benefit for mental health coverage either. I mean, it was like mm-hmm. some ridiculous thing like $500 a year or something. And
mm-hmm.
when I changed jobs, the insurance that I got through that company was just massively better. And, you know, now, I mean, her medications are covered and doctor visits
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff, you know, and they treat the mental health stuff, you know, in a similar vein to everything mm-hmm. else. And, you know, and it's a lot of peace of mind, you know, and, you know, that leaves me with, you know, anxious thoughts of, well, God, what happens if I ever lose my job, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
So I understand, you know, where people are coming from when they don't have the coverage to begin with, because, you know, it's a terrifying thing, you know, and I worry about that for us personally.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, I worry about that people as a whole. And, I, you know, I'm very much on board with the whole single payer Medicare for all kind of thing that, you know, is
mm-hmm.
is currently trying to be pushed in the Senate. And
mm-hmm.
You know, people are all, well, how are we gonna pay for that? And it's like, well, you know what, if me paying a little bit more of my taxes makes sure that some poor kid that's got cancer gets treatment without having to bankrupt his family, take my
mm-hmm.
money. You know
yeah.
what I mean? You know, I would prefer
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I'm going to go off my political high horse now because, you know, that's a whole nother rabbit hole we can go down.
Right. But, you know, just real quick, and hopefully it doesn't reopen that wound. But, no, that goes back to what we were talking about just a minute ago. Like, our immediate reaction, just as human beings, like what happens in our brain, we get very selfish. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why a lot of people are against that stuff, is because, oh, well, it's not affecting me. You know what I mean? And that's
right.
like for, you know, that's just a really crappy way to look at it, like a really bad way to look at it. Because
exactly.
One of the things that I try to do as well, and a big issue I see with mental illness, with addiction and stuff, we are a very reactive society, very reactive. Like, I often just think about, like, what if we had put in these safety measures beforehand, you know what I mean? Like it bums me out. Like I do a walk every year with my clients every February. There's a walk for the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. And
right.
I would say that, man, 75%, maybe 80% of the attendees, like there's hundreds of people out there, but I'd say a bulk of them, between 75 and 80%, they're people who have lost somebody to suicide. You know, why can't we get the bulk of people out there who are trying to prevent their loved one from committing suicide? You see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
We need to start being more proactive about this stuff. And that's why we start talking about mental health, you know, like there's so much we can do beforehand to prevent stuff from happening. So like real quick, like, one of my main job duties is keeping in touch with clients after they leave treatment, providing them with support. And I deal with thousands of people. I work at a very large treatment center. I have two here in Las Vegas, so I work with thousands of people. So whenever I'm doing groups, I tell them that I wish my business card said something this simple: call me before you do something stupid, because I'm trying to get them in the mindset of being proactive rather than reactive. It's so much easier to help people before rather than after. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. There are a couple of different things I want to talk about, and we're starting to get a little low on time, so I'm trying to figure out which way to go on this.
Lightning round.
Really,
let's do it.
Really, yeah. really quick, Chris, because it was, we briefly touched on it, was you talked about mindfulness and meditation. You know, that's something that Beck's actually been trying to figure out a little bit too, is the whole mindfulness thing. Can you just take a minute to explain you know, again, what the benefits are for those who don't or are unsure how to use mindfulness and meditation.
Yeah, so real short answer, go check out my YouTube channel. I have a lot of stuff. Like, for anybody who's listening to the replay of this, like, go check it out. But mindfulness is a practice. John Kabat-Zinn, he's like, they call him like the father of like Western mindfulness. And it's, he describes it like this: paying attention on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally. All right. And what it is so, for example, I have anxiety. A lot of anxiety, like we were just talking about, is worry about the future, right? Or regret of the past. Mindfulness is a practice of bringing your attention back to the right here and right now. So what it's done is it's helped me get more control over my thoughts, over my emotions. Like, there is just mountains and mountains of benefits from this thing, and not enough people are practicing it. Like, what mainly sold me on mindfulness was I was 3 years sober when I was introduced to it, and what happened to me mentally within the first couple weeks was something that hadn't happened in 3 years sober. You know what I mean? Just this calm. And I do want to throw a disclaimer out there. Not everybody sees the benefits as quickly as I did, but the benefits for me were almost immediate. And because of my addictive personality, I was like, this is the solution. And just the more I started doing research and stuff like that, I started seeing that it had a lot of scientific backing to it. You know, it's just, because of our Western culture, we live in a society where people are trained from a very young age that if you have any type of problem, you need to throw medication at it. Whereas in Eastern cultures, like, they don't do that. So it's a very hard sell on people. You know what I mean?
Right.
But all I can tell people is, you know, just start practicing. Like, this is something that, even though it's completely secular, it comes from Buddhism. And there's a Buddha quote I always screw up. But he says, like, you know, don't take my word for it. Just try it for yourself, you know? And that's the most I can say, you know?
Cool. Very cool. You mentioned your YouTube channel. What is, if people are looking for you on YouTube, what are they going to look up to find you?
The Rewired Soul. So the
that's
same as my Twitter and my Instagram. So The Rewired Soul. And yeah, I need more input on, I try to supply and demand, like, whatever people want, I put up there. So a lot of my subscribers, a lot of the people who watch it, are mainly people who struggle with addiction, mainly addiction, but then anxiety and depression. But I'm really trying to make my YouTube channel, kind of like we were discussing earlier, overall mental health. Like, all this stuff is intertwined. So on my channel, I have a depression hack series that I need to do more videos for. There's a whole bunch of videos on there about mindfulness. One thing that I do too on there is I cover mental health news. So you might like that, Joe. Like, whenever there's news out there about healthcare stuff or what's happening in our country or some of the recent tragedies with celebrities and stuff, I hop on there, I give my take, or, you know, just any kind of news, because we need to, more people need to understand what's going on in our country. So maybe we can get more voices out there that are going to help come to the solution. But yeah, one thing that I try to do on my YouTube channel, like my tagline is, we talk about the problem, but we focus on the solution. One of my motivations was I saw a lot of YouTubers out there who just sat there and talked about the problem, and then the video is over. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we need to quit just talking about the problem. Like, we can talk about the problem all day long, but what is the solution? So that's what I try to do with every video. And if I don't do it, call me out on it. But I try to end the video with potential solutions that will help people.
That's very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very cool. We are just about out of time. And that sucks because we're having a great conversation with you.
Why don't you tell the folks again how they can get in touch with you through social media.
Yeah, so I'm on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. All three of those are The Rewired Soul. Also, if you need to email me, if you want to talk in private, therewiredsoul@gmail.com. My biggest following is on Facebook right now, and I can't figure out how to change the name, but it's The Rewire Channel. So that's the only one that's different. But yeah, I do my best, and just anybody listening, I do my best to reply to everybody as quickly as possible. So I do try to be an actual person rather than like those automated bots and stuff. So yeah, if anybody needs like, you know, some personal talking or questions, like hit me up in any of those places.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for being here. This has been really, really enlightening and a really great conversation. We're so glad to have you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I loved it, too. We got to do this again sometime.
Yeah, we could have. We had enough questions to go for a whole another hour. So
yeah.
we can definitely have you on again in the future.
Cool. Yeah, and if there's anything new coming up for you that you want to highlight, you know, a new feature on the website or, you know, some new whatever that could be that you want to promote, you know.
Yeah, give me a shout.
Get a hold of us because we would love to have you back and, you know, promote the hell out of it for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll be in touch. We'll be in touch.
All right. Stay on the line for just a minute. And this is Brandon and James. You belong.
Back in fighting the law of attraction, never the one taking action. Years of denying this beauty inside. Sleeping, scared of the fear they'd speak, and I never knew I was a beacon, waiting and waiting to light up the sky. When you're down and out, don't know what to do, what I found for me, I can be for you. If it comes from love, it'll never ever be wrong. 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 You belong. If your heart can still beat, you belong. You just
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.